True crime fans rejoice. Small Town Murder is now on Podcast One. Crime and Sports' James Petragallo and Jimmy Wissman look at small towns, what makes them tick, and the murders that took place there. In-depth research, horrible tragedy, and the host's comedic spin on the whole thing. What can go wrong? Subscribe to hear new episodes every Thursday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts.
This is Corolla Digital.
Welcome to Forbes' presentation of Reasonable Doubt, the best hour in the universe.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. No choice but to get on. Mandate, get on. Welcome to the best hour in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Gergis over there.
Happy to be here for the best hour.
And guess who's back? Christopher Darden in studio.
Hey, good to see you again, Christopher.
Hey, the roof.
The book, by the way, which has been out for a little while, but it's called In Contempt, and it's Christopher's book, and you can pick that up on Amazon.
Don't you have a new one, too?
I wrote four after In Contempt. So yeah? There are a bunch of them out there.
Okay. All right. Well, go look them all up. Go to Amazon, click in Christopher Darden, and then the books will pop up and give it a nice review. And bookmark us and click through our website. It always helps.
Fun fact. You know whose daughter is my Navy SEAL special op? Chris Darden's.
Really?
Oh, yeah. She's been with me for years now. Tiffany is something else.
Yeah, it's kind of a pinky in the brain thing. We're going to take over the whole world.
You brought your son, Chase, with you today, right?
Yeah, I have Chase out there. He's got a driver's permit, and he wants to drive home.
Oh, boy. Although I was just telling Chase when we were talking about Tiffany, I said, boy, I tell this to Tenny all the time. Between Tenny and Tiffany, I say it's a good thing that you two females in the law have your careers in front of us and that Chris and I have ours in the rearview mirror, because you don't want to be a man in the law in the next 40 years.
That's right.
I think philosophically, but statistically, women are taking over. I mean, college graduate, life expectancy, auto insurance rates. I mean, they're just kicking our ass in every field.
I have to tell you, speaking of books, you're in 50 years, we're all going to be chicks. You were so wrong.
I know.
It was like 5 years.
It was like 5 years.
Yeah.
I did that book, I don't know, 8 years ago now. So, Christopher, we like having you back anyway, but especially on the heels of all this OJ, if I did it stuff. And I guess they Judith Regan did the interview, and they Fox sat on it for a long period of time. And
well,
now it's
so long that, can I be catty about this, by the way? Was that Judith Regan who was in the, as you're looking on the TV, all the way to the right?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, yeah. It was. What are you saying?
That's all I'm going to say.
Put a little weight on it.
There was a conversation had in my household, too.
What? Yeah, there's nobody. I mean, the amount of texts I got during that were not about you. I hate to say it. It was just, can you believe Judith Regan? That was kind of that must have been trending.
You can say whatever you want about Judith Regan, because I've had a long battle with Judith Regan.
You have.
Yes, because...
Well, you clearly won, because I'm looking at you right now.
is it the Battle of the Bulge? She was fresh off her Howard Stern book, and she came out here from New York to meet Dr. Drew and myself to talk about our upcoming Loveline book. Ooh. And she did this move, which I hate, which is, where do we meet? And we end up agreeing on the lobby of the hotel she's staying in,
which is
very convenient for her.
Right, but let me guess, on the west side of Los Angeles.
On the
Angeles.
West side.
Right,
of course, and guess of who course. Was 35 minutes late to her own goddamn meeting in her own goddamn lobby, and then explained to Drew and I why we didn't have a good book idea. So yeah. I'm no fan. But anyway, Christopher.
You stole the show, by the way.
Did I?
Yeah.
I wasn't planning to. I was planning to say as little as possible.
But you couldn't resist. I know how that goes.
Well, I think, the 10 things I said, I think they put all 10 things in.
It was unbelievable. Did you watch it? Watched the excerpts?
I watched the excerpts.
I was besieged with people telling me to turn it on. So I rushed back. I turned it on. And it was basically, it was you.
Well,
the show was you.
Well, I should have charged more than $100 I charged, huh?
Yeah, I know. Why didn't you? You were quite the attraction.
I didn't know it was going to go prime time. I didn't know.
It was not only prime time. Didn't it beat the crap? The ratings were unbelievable on it.
Well, I wouldn't know about that. I'm a country lawyer. All I care about is getting paid.
I turned on TMZ that night, and I saw the clip of you talking about Kanye. I think Kanye West had a T-shirt that said, like, free OJ. It always bothers me a little bit when people do that kind of stuff. Like, and it seems trendy or hip or interesting or I'm going to stick it to the man or whatever it is. But the guy killed two people. Like, find somebody else. Yeah, would you please? Like, find some guy like Evel Knievel or something who's, you know, smacked a few reporters with a baseball bat, but didn't actually take a knife to anyone's throat. But you took some umbrage to Kanye wearing the free OJ shirt.
Well, you know, I take umbrage to anybody wearing those kinds of shirts. You know, even the free Charlie Manson shirts, and Kanye probably has one of those in his closet, too. I mean, you know, you just can't, you know, uplift and celebrate the killer and ignore the killed. I mean, geez, what kind of society are we living in? Then, of course, on TMZ the other day, there's video of OJ signing autographs with Caucasian women.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they voted for Trump, and they took pictures with OJ.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild?
You know?
So wait, there was a raging controversy, which I didn't understand, raging, maybe that's overstates it, as to whether that was a confession. I mean...
Well, you know, I mean, supposedly it's described in terms of a hypothetical... not any kind of hypothetical we deal with in the law.
Because I was going to say, it looked like facts. An admission to me and a declaration against penal interest all day long. And I saw did you see Sean Hawley's thing that Sean did?
No, I did not. I heard about it.
Sean did an epic, epic defense of it that I just, and that you could see what the struggle, you could literally see the struggle about how he was, it was almost like he was method acting, you know, some Strasbergian method acting, getting into persona. I said, no, that's that.
Was the female who was on.
Sean was what?
Yeah, she was the female lawyer with the defense team. I mean, OJ was kind of tearing up a little bit. His eyes got a little moist as they could possibly get.
Well, obviously you guys wouldn't direct any of your clients to sit down with Judith Regan under any hypotheticals about possible involvement in murders. What is OJ getting paid to do this?
I think isn't he, Chris?
Well, when this interview was done in 2006, we heard that he was paid $3.5 million and that the money was sent to a shell corporation somewhere offshore.
Right, because Goldman would get it.
Right, to avoid Goldman's judgment from the civil case where he was found liable.
This thing where we're able to owe somebody millions of dollars because the court found that you were guilty of slaying a son, but then you can just send paydays to corporations offshore. I don't think there's anyone who agrees with that.
Well, Florida protects the NFL pension as well. There's a carve out there. That's why he wants to be in Florida.
But you heard 3.5 was the number you heard.
That's the number I heard in 2006. And, of course, we were all outraged. And there was a huge public outcry. And Fox decided not to air the interview.
Do you think that he would have had, I mean, I'm assuming he would have had to sit down with some legal expert and discuss how this hypothetical would work and what would sort of keep him from having this used against him versus getting paid, having it sent offshore and being able to hammer those checks.
Well, you know, the first person to contact Judith Regan about the interview was one of O.J. Simpson's lawyers. So I'm sure he talked to a lawyer about it and knew what the ramifications were. I mean, there aren't any real legal ones, except for perhaps losing the $3.5 million to the Goldman family judgment. You know, this double jeopardy, he's got nothing to lose.
All he can do is make jeopardy, money. Right. Do you think, do you guys assume that he had representation on site just off of outside of the camera lens?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, the Shapiro kind of bailed almost immediately. When after the case, Kardashian was dead. Barry Scheck and Peter kind of went on their way to Innocence Project, and Effley Bailey had his own issues. So I can't, I don't know. Did he have Galanter?
Well, I don't know if any lawyer was present there or not. You know, I asked Judith some questions about some of that stuff, and I don't really have answers for you.
Was she eating and you couldn't understand her, or did she just refuse to answer? Sometimes you have to wait for people to swallow.
You know, the South will rise again, and at some point, Judith is going to get both of you.
So is it – I haven't even seen a picture of her today, so I don't even know if she's a big or not. Is it so
– There you go. There you go.
We're looking at new and old. All right. So is it – could you say that if you were OJ's lawyer and right. he agreed to do this with Fox – could you
Which,
say?
By the way, How to Be a Millionaire one time put up, I think that's what the show was. It was like A, B, C, and D. Who is not OJ's lawyer? And I was the right answer. And it was like Shapiro, Effley Bailey.
Oh, the TV show, How to Be a Millionaire.
TV show.
Right.
And for some reason, ever since then, every time I'm in an airport, somebody will say, hey, you're OJ's lawyer. And right. I said, no, I wasn't OJ's lawyer.
Well, you know what? People in the airports come up to me and say, hey, you're the guy that got OJ law.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's,
really?
It's astonishing, you know? Right?
Well,
so if I was OJ's lawyer, yes.
Would you request, like when you're sitting down and negotiating with Fox, would you say, I want final cut? I want to be able to see this thing.
Absolutely.
A lot of folks have, like, let's say, if you're going to do a photo shoot, I'm going to tell you, or not me, but someone who is attractive would go, I want to be able to select the pictures you use.
Yeah, editorial control basically
right.
is what they say.
Right.
They wouldn't get it.
But they might ask. All right, let me tell you about Tommy John.
For $3.5 million, I confess.
Spring has sprung. That means spring cleaning. Start with your underwear drawer. Go with the mind-blowing comfort of Tommy John. Tommy John underwear. It never rides up. The waistbands never roll down. It's wedgie-proof, I tell you. Plus socks that never fall down and undershirts that stay tucked in. Second skin tees are wrinkle-resistant. They never shrink. In terms of sleeping apparel, I used to go with the trunks, like the basketball trunks,
right.
but they start spinning around on you when you're rolling around and things are getting sideways. I've switched over to Tommy John for sleeping.
I wear the long sleeve shirt, which
yes.
has got the three buttons. It's my favorite shirt.
It's all backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Tommy John. No adjustment needed. Gary?
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam and get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
So, Christopher, I probably asked you this before because that's on Wired, but big picture for you in terms of career trajectory, life, and general happiness, the OJ case, good, bad? Could we assign a number to it, like 60% bad and 40% good? Like, obviously, we all know who you are. Would we have known who you were before? And has this helped? Is it sleepless nights? You get to go through airports and get recognized. Is that good? Is that bad?
Well, I think it all sucks.
It
all sucks. And, I could have retired, as a judge or something.
I think you would have been on the Court of Appeal, if not the Cal Supreme Court, would have been my guess. His trajectory, can I say it? Because he won't say it. He's too humble. His trajectory, especially back then with the governor who was there, who was law and order at the time, and with the who was getting appointed to the bench, you would have been Court of Appeal. I would have bet big money Court of Appeal, and I would have probably laid 3-2 that it would have been Cal Supreme.
Well, I did get an invitation in the 90s to apply to the bench by Governor Pete Wilson,
yeah.
Which I didn't do because I was, famous and out chasing tail and being a fool. and wasting my youth and the like. I mean, the thing is, I guess it gets a little better because, now that he's confessed, my daughter asked me, yesterday, do you feel vindicated now? And it's like, well, you know, everybody wants to argue about whether it's a confession or not. So so we have that new argument.
Which, know? By the way, this goes back to my question: how silly is that?
I mean, right? It's the most outrageous thing ever. And for me to sit there, you know, and I don't know what the hell he's going to say. They say, come down. I go down. I'm sitting here listening to this stuff, watching him minimize, you know, beating his wife and taking a baseball bat to the windshield of her Mercedes and, you know, and proclaiming, I'm not a stalker. But then he's looking through the window in the middle of the night watching her have sex with another guy. You know? Mm-hmm. And the next morning he comes over yelling at her and kicks a door in. But he says, but otherwise, I'm a nice guy.
Well, that's why the parole hearing. We haven't talked to you since the parole hearing. That must have driven you crazy, right?
Yeah, he said he never had any problem with anybody. And nobody ever accused him of being violent. And of course, you know, I'm sitting there saying, well, hell, I've heard you being violent. And
right.
Of course,
I've got it on tape.
Yeah, and I've seen your handiwork.
I have a racially charged question.
Oh, another one.
Good. Okay. My feeling of, oh, well, the guy's a pillar in the black community. I couldn't find a guy further away from the black community. He marries blonde women. He lives in Holmby Hills. He plays golf with a bunch of rich Jews all day and then goes and does, you know, some corporate whatever for corporate America. I feel beside being black, there is no connection to the black community. As someone who's black, does it bother you when they get behind a guy who really has no connection, or is there something I'm unaware of, or does it not bother you?
Well, you know, it bothered me at the time, you know, because it didn't make any sense, you know, and to see black women, you know, go on and on about O.J. Simpson, understanding that they never had a shot at O.J. Simpson, which is probably to their benefit.
Right. Well, dodged.
You know,
knife
so,
dodged.
Yeah, I mean, you know. Hey, well, you know, what can you say? You know, we can't all be Wakandans, right?
So, yeah, not a bad movie, by the way. Took the boy, said he liked it. Better than Spider-Man. Or maybe I had it tied with Spider-Man. Black Panther. So, for you, Christopher, what does this case do to you? We figured out that the trajectory is going toward the moon, and then this thing lands in your lap, and then all of a sudden it just takes on a life of its own. Is your trajectory interrupted, your life interrupted? I mean for beyond the time of the trial.
Well, my life is interrupted. You know, it has proven to be a huge distraction ever since I, you know, got on the case in November of 1994. And you know, far too much and unfairly so. I think it defines my career. You know,
that's the thing that bothers me about it, because the people don't understand. You had, it's interesting. I mean, you were in the, what did they call it then? Did they call it, what was your unit?
Well, it was a Special Investigation Division.
Yeah, SID. I forget. It's been PID. It's been JSID. It's been this. But you were, he was doing, to my mind, he was doing the best thing that a prosecutor could do. You should talk about that, because that was what, to my mind, defined your career at that point.
And what we were doing was investigating officer-involved shootings.
Right.
And so, you know, these issues that people are confronting today, we were confronting those same issues in the 90s. I was in a unit, and we were trying to reform the way the district attorney's office investigated police officer-involved shootings. And there was a group of us who were very vocal, you know, in the DA's office, and who were very adamant that police officers ought to be held accountable for bad shootings.
Well, was Kathy Mader in that unit then?
Yeah, Kathy Mader was in that unit.
Wow. There's a Judge Mader now to me, but
yes.
She was something. She was the – we told the story about – was it Iverson?
Yeah,
it was Iverson. The tow truck driver?
Yes.
Yeah, she prosecuted that case in front of – oh, God, what was his name? The judge who was – he was so smart, but I used to call him the peremptory challenge magnet in
CCB.
Wasn't
Fiddler.
No, it was not Fiddler. It was Chuck. It was Charles – God.
Now,
went out to Pomona afterwards
Iverson was driving a tow truck and was shot
by the LAPD from behind. Actually,
yes,
and the jury hung.
About that.
And then the judge, I can't believe I've got a. I used to always sit with the giant 7-Eleven mug of Diet Coke on his thing starting at 8:30 in the morning. And then he was out in Pomona for many years. And he played in a rock and roll band, too. And I can't believe I've got a mental block. I'm having a... Come on, how come you don't remember? They put him in Department 108 or wherever Horan. In CC. Horan! Chuck Horan. There you go.
See, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Wildly unsatisfying to everyone listening because you've never heard of Chuck Horan. So did Iverson...
Talk about inside baseball, right?
Did they get the cops or not?
No. Horan single-handedly cut Judge Bader off at the knees and wouldn't let her retry it and dismissed it with prejudice.
You know, well, have we come...
And the thing about that case is, like, for me, you know, at the time being, you know, harassed, you know, like, oh, he doesn't like black people, he's not a member of the black community, all of that. I was advocating the filing of that case.
Right.
And ultimately, I was accused in a civil service complaint of having a bias against white people, and so therefore I was taken off the case.
Wow! Okay. Have we? I don't feel like we've come very far from those days to today.
No, talk about the criminal courts building in the 90s. That's what's so frustrating sometimes. He lived it. I lived it. I mean, I remember I was in Oudekerk's court down the hall on a campaign money laundering case, and Kathy and Gail, who's now a judge too, were the prosecutors originally on that, but they were bouncing between Oudekerk and Horan and on that case. And then your case comes across the hall. I had Art Snyder. That was back when he was a councilman. Remember that? Snyder. Campaign money laundering. And then, I mean, everything he was doing, you were 25 years ahead of your time.
Yeah, yeah, we were way ahead of our time.
Well, can I say this? The whole system seems flawed. I mean, most recently, what you got going on in Mesa, Arizona.
Right.
It's just, it's basically...
Although, P.S., the Department of Justice, as I told you, did subpoena the records from the Mesa Police Department. So I've got my fingers crossed that they're going to indict... both cops.
Oh, good. I'm a big advocate of getting the guy who is doing all the verbal commands.
Right, who's crazy and who fled to the Philippines. We'll see if they extradite him.
It does seem like the coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers also working as a referee in the playoff game, and he's going to be in charge of making the calls. And, of course, all the calls magically go against – the Oilers or whatever team they're playing, because the coach is also the referee. And I feel like when you try to bust the cops and you ask other cops and judges and everyone's in the same tent, essentially, and you're looking for justice, but how can the guy referee the game when he's also playing for the other team?
Well, that's one of the reasons that Chris was ahead of his time. Tell what you were trying to do back then, because it was revolutionary at the time.
Well, what we were trying to do was we were trying to create a scenario where when these shootings were investigated, they were done in such a way that the evidence we might recover or discover was admissible at trial, because almost all of our investigations were tainted by statements made by the shooter, which were coerced by his commanding officer.
Right.
And so we couldn't use those statements. And so I could go out to the scene, I could interview witnesses, but once I came into possession of the officer's coerced statement, you know, I was radioactive, you know, and we really couldn't use it, and it tainted the entire investigation. And many times, I believe it led to some bad cops getting away with some bad shootings.
Do you remember? I'll tease this because I'll do another spot, but I'd be curious when the OJ case came across your docket, your first impression, like your first just gut of what and oh and whatever went on with your at first glance when you first realized you're going to be involved with this and it was sitting on your desk, like were you confident? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you couldn't have foreseen that this was going to change the trajectory of your life. But just your first impulse, sit on that. I'll tease that for a second. I'll tell you guys about hymns. 65% of men start losing their hair by age 35. What? I'm still sitting pretty. 4hymns.com. It's one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness, and more. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat that hair loss. So you want to nip it in the bud. Generic equivalents of name-brand prescriptions to keep your hair. No gas station countertop supplements. No waiting room or awkward doctor visits. Our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 while supplies last. So this would cost hundreds if you went to the pharmacy. You get the real stuff, the stuff that works, not the herbal stuff that doesn't work. So go to forhims.com/doubt. That's forhims.com/doubt. Forhims.com/doubt. So first thing that ran through your head when you heard about this case?
Well, you know, when it came to me, and ultimately the question was put to me, you know, would I participate in the trial? You know, I actually drove from L.A. up to the Bay Area and had to talk with my father about it because I realized how controversial it would be for me, you know, to join the prosecution team, although I didn't realize just how controversial it would be. Mm-hmm. But I knew it would, you know, create some difficulties. And I remember talking to John Outerkirk, you know, the judge you just mentioned a moment ago, Mark, because John was my former calendar deputy, and he was a judge, and he and I had a talk about it. Also.
Is that confidential, or can you tell me what he said?
He said, well, you know, if you're going to do it, just, you know, keep your head down and, you know, be quiet and don't say anything stupid.
Now, what did your
dad, what did your dad say?
Because Mark's dad would have called you a schmuck and told you.
I mean, it's so funny that you went to your old man about that. I went to the old man about Peterson because it was I felt the same way. It was like everybody keeps telling me it's a no-win situation. Why should I do it? My old man kind of shamed me into it and said, if you're going to worry about that, then what the hell are you doing practicing criminal defense?
Yeah, and your old man was correct. And, you know, my dad was just saying, you know, there'll be hell to pay if you for all of us, really, if you take that case. But he supported it. He believed in his guilt, and he believed he ought to be prosecuted.
What was your dad's profession?
Welder.
Oh, really?
Former Army man, you know, Korean War veteran. He passed away this past September.
Wow.
As a matter of fact.
How old was he?
He was 84.
84?
Yeah.
But obviously not in the professional law like Mark's father, but a guy who had a good command on sensible thinking.
Well, he often reminded me that he was a better lawyer than I was because he took a business law class over at the junior college, and he might have been. He got me out of a few scrapes.
So he said, I don't want you to do this because it's going to be something we're never really going to be able to move past.
True.
But if you are going to do it, do the best you can do.
Yeah, essentially. Essentially, you know, he was an old soldier, and he believed in duty. You know?
Now, at that time, you must have been fairly confident that you're going to win this case. You were not.
I was not.
You were
no, because you came in. You weren't from the get go. When did you?
I came in after the first 12 jurors were picked.
Yeah, exactly. So remember, there's all kinds of stuff that happens before Chris is there, including had Hodgman already? No, he had not yet. Hodgman hadn't gone on the DL yet.
Correct.
So
shortly after.
Shortly.
Why
after.
Are you not confident that you're going to win?
Because I live in L.A. and I hang out in the hood, and I go to First AME Church, and I talk to people, and I hear what people say, and I knew that many in the black community in L.A. were not going to support a conviction, and many people were insisting that he be acquitted no matter what.
And it had nothing to do with guilt or innocence. It was that's why that was it. The 30 for 30. Somebody did a good documentary that I thought put it much better than any other analysis I've ever. But you have to remember what the context was of what was going on. I mean, there was hell to pay after Rodney King, and I don't think people truly understand, unless you lived here in Los Angeles, just what the temperature was.
Well, Christopher Darden would probably know better than most of the parishioners at the black church. You know how many black men were executed by LAPD and then watched the white officers walk. So in a way, from your where the office you were working, So in a weird way, you should have stronger feelings about this than just Aunt Millie at the church.
Well, mind you, remember who you were dealing with, Daryl Gates, for part of your career. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Daryl Gates. Talk about a rich irony, right?
Daryl Gates famously had the battering ram, the piece of army equipment that he had outfitted with a big lance in the front to just batter, bash into crack houses or any house. Yeah. He also I think after the riots sort of came out, he sort of was understood that he told his guys to kind of stand fast or not get involved and let the city burn or what have you. But not a friend of the black man, I would say, Daryl Gates.
For years, the LAPD had this operation they called Operation Hammer. And they'd send a couple of hundred cops out to a neighborhood, and they'd shut it down for four square blocks, and they'd stop and frisk anything and anybody moving. And
it was like martial law.
Yeah, people got irritated. People didn't like that.
Right. And then I kind of think the story was once they told him they didn't like it, once people started starting fires, he went, well, you don't want me? Then I'll just hang out here, enjoy life without us. I think he got accused of that.
That's a common response when you criticize your local police department.
Well, I think they call it's a little bit of what they call the Ferguson effect,
guys are stopped.
They're not getting out of their cars anymore.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to read an ironic ad. It's ironic.
Is it more confession?
No. Okay. It's you deserve the truth. Yeah. You know who do, this is the name, the first 48. Marsha Clark investigates the first 48.
Wow.
Yeah. Look at that.
On A&E.
Yeah. Yeah. New original docuseries premieres Thursday, March 29th at 9 p.m. on A&E. Marsha delves into some of America's most shocking unsolved crimes or controversial verdicts. Each two-hour episode explores a different investigation, taking an in-depth look at the first 48 hours after the crime to uncover new revelations and angles. Okay, so here are the controversial murder cases that Marsha's going to look at. Casey Anthony's daughter, Kaylee. Chandra Levy. I had a front row seat to that. Robert Blake's wife, Bonnie Lee Bakley. Who was the prosecutor in that? Was Shelley Samuels?
I think that guy from The Rock Band is in Pomona now.
I don't remember. I think that was Shelley. DMC's Jam Master Jay and Drew Peterson's wife, Stacy. Thursday, March 29th at 9 p.m. on A&E. Marsha Clark, you deserve the truth. Have you seen, when was the last time you saw Marsha?
It's been a while.
I haven't seen Marsha in a while either.
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting to see her a year or so ago on the Today Show. She and I were both going to appear, on the Today Show.
And she didn't, she was a no-show?
And she had another engagement. It was hard for a black guy to get a date with a white guy.
Yeah.
It's just so damn hard. OJ's making it hard for brothers.
You know, I was gonna be politically incorrect too and talk about Marsha pre-OJ, because Marsha pre-OJ was thought of as one of the hot females in the DA's office. Isn't that true?
How would I know? I'm in the trenches. I'm down there fighting crime. Come on.
I could name, we used to say the problem with the DA's office and females, I'm going to be so politically incorrect, is that it sucks the beauty out of them after about 10 years. I don't know what happens to them. Chris isn't even going to comment. You should see his face right now.
I think that they're all just
they're gorgeous.
Lovely. And see, guys like Mark, they developed this term to describe the women in the DA's office back then. They called them ball cutters.
Yeah.
I heard the official term to say that. And they heard it too, and they promptly cut off their balls.
They cut off their balls.
They were good lawyers.
Yeah, Marsha was a great lawyer. She was in hardcore, right? Wasn't she in hardcore? Well,
she was in major crimes.
You know, her mentor was Harvey Giss, right?
Harvey Giss and Dave Kahn.
Harvey was a hell of a prosecutor.
Oh yeah, he was.
Harvey made his career off of beating Leslie in Bob's Big Boy? Walk down memory lane. Remember the Bob's Big Boy murder? It was like four quadruple homicide. The guys rounded up the The Bob's Big Boy put, yes, took him into the freezer.
Right.
And Leslie was in her prime at the time. And Leslie Abramson, who famously then went on to defend the Menendez brothers. And she
same
and
hairstylist as Marsha Clark back in the day.
Boy, are we going to get it? We're going to.
No,
Chris,
you guys are going to
get it. Chris is disassociating himself from, okay, from all of this.
I got to be in court tomorrow. I can't deal with this.
They
I love
the
women in the DA's office.
I love them,
they're
too.
Fantastic.
Some of my best friends are the women in the DA's office.
Yeah.
I'm going to get hammered.
Gorgeous.
I'm going to be in court on Monday in front of
and
some ex-DA. Yeah, the judges. Right, because all the judges are ex-DAs. So, Jesus.
Scott Gordon, I just want to tongue kiss him.
The Bob's Big Boy murder. I remember being horrified by that. They took them. They took over. Like after closing, right, they rounded up the employees. They put them in the freezer. And they, which Bob's Big Boy was that?
And
what
was
this? I think it was La Cienega and
Cadillac.
I was going
to say West Side, right?
Wow, Cienega and what?
Cadillac.
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely.
For
which
those
is
who
another
are
reason why
West Side.
It caught everybody's imagination. If that had happened at another Bob's Big Boy at another demo, it always reminds me of, remember the woman
hold on, let's just, for people listening, I just went to Jimmy's wife's birthday party on La Cienega, a big upscale club with all celebrities, and right, Jennifer Aniston and everyone is there. La Cienega is affluent, white, upscale, West Side, if you're
right,
listening from Indiana. So that's not Compton. That's not the hood.
Right. And I remember what killed Westwood was the shooting of the Asian American female. And that literally, that's why you live Pasadena adjacent. That's why Old Town Pasadena kind of popped up and came out of its doldrums, because all of a sudden Westwood became a real problem. God forbid
Westwood
there's a little crime.
Westwood was off the UCLA campus, and it's the place that everyone would go to watch movies on a Friday night and cruise around and walk around. And there was two incidents. There's one where a car hopped up on the curb,
right,
and ran over some people. And there's another one where someone got shot and then suddenly turned into a ghost town.
You're right. It was a total ghost town.
Still a ghost town.
So yeah.
Covered. You're right.
You were going to say that the La Cienega Bob's Big Boy murders, if that had taken place in Bakersfield, we wouldn't have cared.
No, nobody would have given a shit. But because it was in a neighborhood that people like to fixate on, that, how did this happen in our neighborhood?
Well,
it gained traction.
I have a modern day sort of version of that, although it's not apples to apples, but. You know, you hear about these school shootings, and it always happens in some place where Oprah then says, if it could happen here, it could happen anywhere, because it's always small town America or lily white America or whatever, you know, just suburbia. And then these kids get shot at school. But to make the Bob's Big Boy analogy, then somebody says, well, there's people getting gunned down, young black men in Chicago getting shot on a daily basis. No one seems to care. Is that sort of the equivalent to this racially? That
I used to say that for cable news, Chris can correct me if he thinks I'm wrong, but I used to say, why is it missing white women are like always so topical? I mean, I lived through it with Lacey Peterson, and you lived through it with Chandra Levy, and you lived through it with these things. And I mean, as soon as it's Natalie Holloway, I mean, as soon as it's a missing white woman, man, they come out like gangbusters, and you don't blame them because they get the ratings for whatever reason.
Sure, sure. And in Washington, D.C., in Baltimore, in that area, there's been an epidemic of missing young black
right.
women, and they get no press at all.
I was just listening to a story earlier today about we live in an insane society because, like, Boko Haram abducts 275 school-age girls in Uganda or wherever the hell they are, takes them away. There's that whole thing a few years ago with Michelle Obama, hashtag, you know, bring the girls back and everything like that. They got about 70 of the 275 back, but the other 200 they have not gotten back. That's, it's been 3 or 4 years. And you turn on the Oscars and it's, you know, hashtag Me Too, because Jennifer Lawrence only made you know, $7.9 million and her co-star made $9.3 million. And it's like, yeah, what about the 200 gals, school-age gals that Boko Haram still has and is enslaving, whatever? And we're just so selective and screwed up and stupid about what we perceive as a problem versus what is really a problem.
You know, and we destabilized, you know, Libya and in that area now, in those areas, they are enslaving Africans and selling them in open markets.
Right. And, it's exactly right. Do you hear anything about it?
Yeah, this great country has done nothing about it.
It's also, you know, we do these things where I literally, you travel through the Denver airport, you go into the bathroom, and it says human trafficking is a crime. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to Atlanta to go to a car show. What is this? Go over there and do something. Don't tell me to report something if I see it in the Denver airport.
It diminishes what really human trafficking is. I mean, you know, when you start saying that a runaway who comes to Hollywood and ends on Hollywood Boulevard, boy, I mean, compare that to Boko Haram. So, I mean, well, that's kind of the same. But you can't say these things.
Well, Matt Damon is moving
proof.
To Australia. He was at the party last
I love La Cienega,
by the way. But he's moving there. I mean, essentially because he went, well, look, let's not lump Al Franken in with Harvey Weinstein. I mean, one guy was a horrible monster, and the other guy grabbed some ass at the county fair, and then he got thrown out of Hollywood for even suggesting. As a lawyer, that must sound insane to you because all you do is recognize the difference between murder one and vehicular manslaughter and aggravated assault.
And it does drive you insane, but what can you say about it? Because if you start talking about it and if you try to, you know, dissect those two situations, Frank and versus Harvey, you get in trouble.
Well,
you know, it's not politically correct, and it can hurt your career.
Exactly right.
You know, I mean, Bill Cosby's an old friend of yours, right?
Yeah, I love him dearly, Uncle Bill. Why? Is he in the news?
I love him.
I was going to have him punch
him
up my set. Why? Where? What's he up to?
I love him dearly. You know.
Yeah, but,
you know,
speaking of which, what did you think the judge this time around is going to allow in 5-11, whatever the Pennsylvania version of an 1101?
We're talking Bill.
Is. Yeah,
Bill's coming around again.
Bill starts jury selection in 10 days.
Yeah. Really?
10 days? Jury
faster
selection?
Faster than you thought?
No, I figured that they would. Most judges on the second go-round, I mean, I've had judges, when it's a hung jury, tell me, what are you doing next week? I mean, haven't you had that? And they just, boom, you're going. And in this case, the only reason he didn't is because what's-his-name's not trying it. He hired Mesereau, and now he then did a hearing. And as they often do, the prosecution tries to do they had a mulligan, so now they're going to try and fix it. And instead of one 1101, which means modus operandi witness, they're going to allow in five. So the prosecution has to choose between 5 out of 19 or 5 out of 60. I think he gave them a universe of 19.
Yeah, but five extra ones.
All right, I have a hypothetical for both of you. I'm going to have you confess to an A or B answer. Which wife is more pissed off, Camille Cosby or Melania Trump? Now, don't answer.
Okay,
answer. I want you to give it some thought. I mean, and go ahead and be a devil's advocate. Kick them both around. So I think we could make an argument.
I know exactly who I would pick.
All right, well, give it some thought. I'll tell you about the Veridesk. Today's top talent is selective about where they work, preferring flexible, active workspaces. New Veridesk Pro 60 electric standing desk makes it easy. All the Veridesk active workspace solutions improve employee health, boost energy, productivity. We were talking last week about, you know, taking a long flight. Just sitting there flying to New Zealand, they tell you, get up and walk around, move around. You'll get a blood clot if you don't. Veridesk does that at work. What do? You sit around all day at work. It's not good for you. Designed with commercial-grade material for durability and stability, fully assembled in under 5 minutes, made to last, designed for simple setup and easy to move. You can change the configuration as businesses change and grow, and you can try it out for free. That's right. Free 30-day trials, 1 month. So you get free shipping, free returns if you're not totally satisfied, but they know you're going to love it. You can learn more at Veridesk.com/Forbes. That's Varidesk.com/Forbes. All right. Who is more pissed as a wife? I'm gonna include Paulette and my wife Lynette as well. Just to round it out. Let's give a power ranking.
Chris, where are you gonna put?
Well, I'm gonna put it where it belongs. Melania Trump.
Melania. Mm-hmm. But.
Okay, she so that's why I can off. Make it.
She looks angry.
She's angry.
And she should
except
be.
When she's on the arm of the honor guard. I'm telling you, Gary, did you find that picture?
Yeah, he found it.
You gotta find the picture. Look at the face. Look how happy she is there.
But I'm saying
I've never seen her look like that with Trump.
Here's what I'm saying. Camille has been together. Camille and Bill have been together for like 40 years, right?
I mean, 50.
50 years.
I think, yeah.
So Camille may not have signed up for this.
No wife does.
Maybe Melania had some sense of which way the wind was blowing before she married the overweight millionaire who was 22 years her senior. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you know, if you just had a baby.
Yeah.
Last week. Tough. And your husband's out, you know, with a porno.
Banging the porn star.
You know, and.
But what are you thinking? I mean, because the wife always looks at the other woman and mm-hmm. always is fixated on the other woman.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think she looks at Stormy and says, okay.
Cosby married in 64. No.
She's looking at Stormy and going, ew.
Yeah, what is Camille saying about Andrea Costin, though?
You know what? I bet what Camille says is I bet the Cosbys have lived this case for years now. And Camille Cosby probably has a very good idea what's real and what isn't. And I don't necessarily believe everything that everybody says in this case is real
right, or
true. And so, you know.
Interestingly, they both were percolating in 2005 and 6.
Hmm. What about?
Okay, so I'm going to.
As was I.
Yeah. All right, hold on. So you got Camille first. No, sorry. You have Melania first.
He puts Melania first.
Melania you got
first.
Camille second, and then Lynette, Paulette.
Oh, Paulette's ahead of Lynette. Paulette's so far ahead of Lynette. Lynette's not even in this universe.
I know, but you have so many square feet. You're never home.
Right. I got her an apartment in Paris. So yeah. Right? But Lynette, I just get the impression that Lynette understands what she signed up for, whereas Paulette, I don't think had any idea.
Yeah, you know, when you marry a lawyer, you kind of know what you're getting into. You know he or she's going to be working those long hours in close quarters with porno actresses.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's okay for us to work with porno actresses.
All right, so Mark, you have power rankings?
I'm going to put my power rankings. I'm going to put Paulette ahead of Melania. And I'm gonna put Camille. I just think Camille is number one.
I got Camille at number one as well.
Do you? Okay, because here's my argument.
Hold on,
for Camille number
one. Let
us
speak for the black community, please.
Because Camille, I think she looks like she's got longevity to me. I don't think she's going anywhere anytime soon. And if he gets convicted, it's going to be a feeding frenzy in terms of restitution. And I don't know how much money he's got left. I mean, what do you start off
this
with?
This is my angle. I was working the financial angle. Yeah. That, you know, right now Trump's down $1.30 and no real worse for wear for the next election.
$1.30 is nothing.
Camille,
for him, right?
He tips out his caddy when he's done with a round at this golf club at $1.30.
Yeah.
Camille, I don't know what this has cost OJ over the. OJ. If I know what he's. Sorry, wrong black guy. What this has cost Bill Cosby.
We're all OJ. We're all Mike Tyson. Yeah.
Well, inside, but I don't see you guys act on it. What this has costed Bill Cosby monetarily and earnings, potential earnings. I mean, that guy could have been booked at Caesars for the rest of his life.
I mean, they would have given him a theater in his day for he would have made what's-her-name look like a opening act.
You know, what if she's just doing what we want wives to do? I mean, she married the man. She loved the man. She's been with him for 50 years. She believes in him. We all make mistakes. God knows I have like 79, you know, just this year. So,
I speak for yourself. You know, I got 79 this month.
She's supporting her husband. You know, I'm kind of proud of her.
Well, frankly. I want to know what's.
No, she's. Don't get me wrong. I think she should get an award. I mean, she has stood by. She's been good. She's put up with it. Much more so than Melania, which means that I think Payback's a bitch. I think can you imagine what he has to go through?
I mean, Don Jr. did way less, and he's getting worse.
Well, let's talk quickly about the cause, because I'm sort of mixed on all this stuff. I don't like the idea that you go to trial, there's a non-guilty judgment. Not innocent, but non-guilty, and then they immediately just start gearing up for the second trial.
Are you defending him because he's a fellow comedian?
I'm defending him because I don't like a system where somebody has an unlimited amount of resources, maybe running for re-election, or maybe have made a promise upon running for election. The trial didn't work out the way they wanted to do. They didn't mount the case, or the jury didn't agree. And as soon as it ends, they go, all right, well, we'll see you back here in 9 months. We're just going to do it again.
Which is, by the way, which takes us full circle back to Iverson. If he was a cop, the judge would have dismissed it.
Right.
The judge
isn't gonna let him do it. You can't do that with a guy who shot a tow truck driver in the back of the neck, yeah. Right?
Well, you know, I mean, the California Supreme Court, I think, ruled recently that that it was okay to try someone on a fourth time.
Right.
What's
the most you've ever tried a case?
Well, it's about to be three.
Yeah, I did three once in the 90s in Van Nuys on a murder case. It's mind-boggling when you think about it that you could be on trial. And remember that story? I'm trying to remember what the name of it was. There was somebody down in Compton who went to trial four times, I think, and somebody tried the case four times. So,
and there's nothing worse than a retrial.
Oh,
jeez.
Tell me about it.
Getting waxed. O.J. OJ. I'm still on OJ.
You were so
Cosby. We started the first half hour was not OJ. Cosby predictions. What is – how will this one be different?
I'm interested to hear Chris. You want me to write mine down on a piece of paper? What do you think?
Well, you know what? I have a lot of faith in Tom Mesereau. I think the best thing he ever did was to get an L.A. lawyer.
That's his lawyer. That's Cosby's lawyer.
Yeah, he switched. I think that was a mistake. So there's where.
Why would you switch if the last guy got you a favorable outcome?
I don't know that he wanted to retry it. What do you think? I mean, by all accounts, is a great local lawyer and is very effective.
Who wants to retry a case? It's awful to retry a case.
Are you saying he couldn't get his former attorney to do it a second time because the attorney didn't want to do it?
Some lawyers don't want to do the second trial. They're burned out. They've put in everything they can or could in the first trial. They have no original thought, no new idea, no new approach. So it's hard for some lawyers to wrap their heads around a retrial.
Mark, what will be admissible in the second trial? There are new names, new faces?
Yeah, there's going to be four more people than there was in the first that will be testifying. And it's somewhat reminiscent to Spector, because Spector hung the first time. They got a conviction the second time. The conventional wisdom is that a retrial helps the prosecution. I mean, that's conventional wisdom. True. I've always had, for whatever reason, good luck on a retrial, although I'm with Chris. I hate them because it's just you feel like there is a – I think I've told this story in Reasonable Doubt before. I tried a case twice or three times in Riverside. I can't even remember it. It was a molestation case. And literally on the retrial, I had missed something that I thought was going to devastate the defense. Turned out, no, it didn't. But I think you get a little, as a defense lawyer, you get a little sloppy because you think, oh, I hung it the first time, I can hang it again. So,
Phil Spector's in jail, going to be in jail for the
rest of his natural life.
That story always felt a little kind of dubious to me. Like, I'm not a Phil Spector fan, but I don't know. Did he put the gun in her mouth? Did he squeeze the trigger? Like, what? I know maybe his past is haunting him. Lots of stories about gunplay and the Beatles and
Didn't they call 5-1101s in that too?
They called a number of 1101s.
What's 1101?
1101 is this like – I'll let Chris. He's a professor.
You know, it's similar conduct. Other women who came in to testify that, oh, yeah, he played around with that gun.
Was in a bubble. Like, if there was no past, no gunplay, no whatever, he kept the gun in his nightstand for protection. He's never waved it around. And for some reason, that night, it came out with that young actress. Would he be in jail right now?
Well, he could claim accident. You know, yeah. It might be an involuntary manslaughter. You know, what, max of 3 or 4 years versus 15 to life.
Use
of a firearm.
But what was his motivation, or was it just him being wildly irresponsible and finally caught up to him?
Who tried that? Allen and Truck Doe? Jackson tried that case?
Yeah.
Prosecute that case?
Yeah.
I don't think that they ever had a motivation. They just kind of, you know, he was out there, was kind of the feeling.
Extension
of his penis.
Not wanting to defend the man, but it seems a little bit like, you know.
Is this going to be the corollary to your Menendez theory?
Well, you know, I don't.
Do you know his Menendez theory?
No, what's the Menendez theory?
My Menendez, I can tell, not Marcia.
Yeah.
Let's see. Same hairstyle as so, butter knife and a light socket.
Well, Leslie was Spector's lawyer for about 5 minutes.
Oh, she was?
Yeah.
So my theory with the Menendez brothers, if I was trying to get them get them off, I would say, look, we can sit around and discuss whether this guy molested the kids or physically beat on this kids or abused the kids in any way, shape, or form, and whether the mom was sort of
complicit
in these actions. Here's the bottom line. I have twins, so I would work my own personal story into this. It's a little Sonny and Natalia.
That could be effective.
And
it is. Wait until you hear this theory. You're able to change your mind.
They're 11 now, but if 8 years from now, Sonny walked into Natalia's room and said, hey, what are you doing this Sunday? And she said,
nothing.
I liked
it better when it was Natalia walks into Sonny's room. Yeah.
Natalia would do it. Let's make it more realistic.
Okay.
Natalia walked into Sonny's room and said, what are you doing this Sunday? And Sonny said, nothing on the calendar. Why? What'd you have planned? She said, I think I'm going to take a shotgun and slaughter mom and dad while they eat Haagen-Dazs and watch
American Idol.
American Idol. And my son went, this Sunday? Yeah, this Sunday. Okay. You got the shotgun? Yeah. Okay. I'll bring some extra shells. Well, that probably means that me and my wife did a poor job of raising these kids, and I must have done something horrible in order for the other sibling to agree and not be horrified and run into the next room and alert us or call 911 or what have you. So if they both agreed, then nature or nurture, I was a horrible parent.
Exactly.
That's right.
You know, money. You know, money is money and greed.
Yeah, but could you? I get money and greed, but money and greed for both kids.
Which is one of the reasons I've always told my kids they're getting no inheritance.
Oh yeah, my kids know I don't have any money.
Yeah, you never give them an inheritance because that is a carrot that you don't want them to know about.
I had a funny exchange with a neighbor just yesterday. Because it happens all the time. Because my daughter's, she's good, but my son is the nicest, sweetest, most thoughtful. He's not of this earth in terms of his maturity and how thoughtful he is. But I had this funny exchange, which was every time you see somebody, they go, "Oh, hey, tell Sonny I said hi, man. Oh, that guy's the greatest. He really is dynamite, man. I love that kid." He's just such a sweetheart. And then at some point they pause and they catch themselves and they go, "Oh, the girl's great too." I know what you're saying. I feel the same way. But they always stop themselves after 5 or 6 Sonny compliments and realize, "Oh,
realize
the dad.
Right. I can't do this. I can't do this." Wait, you know what? Spring is sprung. Did you know this?
Mm-hmm.
That means spring cleaning. Start with your underwear drawer. Go for the mind-blowing comfort of Tommy John. Underwear that will never ride up. The waistband will never roll down. Wedgie-proof. Plus socks that never fall down and undershirts that stay tucked in. And second skin tees. Wrinkle-resistant, never shrink. By the way, I love that long sleeve. I know I've said this before. It's my favorite shirt, the long sleeve with the 3 buttons.
Good for sleeping during the winter months.
It's great
as well.
It's great for knocking around in. All backed by the best pair or you'll ever wear that you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. What's your favorite piece of undergarment that they make? And do you wear it as an overgarment?
Their underwear is the best, especially if you're jogging or taking the dog for a walk or hitting the gym or whatever. But the The t-shirts that they tucked in and that are meant to wear under the dress shirts are the best.
Exactly.
You guys should have this conversation about Tommy John with Marsha Clark.
We should.
Have her read that. I'd like to have her do the commercial.
Marsha, we'll bring her on next week.
So OJ predict. Hurry, OJ, I keep saying, do your thing and then I'll do that.
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam to get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
So OJ just lives it out in Florida. Do we?
No, he's in Nevada.
Oh, he's in Nevada. Yeah. Is he? There's a kind of a weird thing that I have where I think guys just can't stop themselves. Does he get himself
in trouble again?
In trouble again? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. You know, we had a forensic psychiatrist on the stage actually, and they kind of cut her out of the show. But she
to put in Judith Regan,
she had a lot. They did that for you and Adam. You know, she had a lot to say about Simpson and his mental state and even whether or not he has the propensity, let's say, to perhaps even kill again.
Oh, boy. We can keep our fingers crossed he doesn't do that. And the Cos, back to my favorite Bill Cosby. That trial will start when, do you believe?
From when this is airing, jury selection will be in 5 days.
And predictions on that?
I'm not so sure that he walks this time if there's five people there. I mean, I always, and the prosecution always gets a heads up, so.
Christopher Darden?
Yeah. You know, he's got a great lawyer. You know, the jury's heard all about these women and all of these allegations. And if they do well in jury selection, he has a shot. My thing about Cosby is I just want him to get a fair trial like I'd want for anybody.
Do you guys, last question, do you guys feel like when there is a retrial that the jury feels like there's a little bit of an onus on them to make a decision this time and not have it hung again?
I think they feel that. Don't you think they feel that in any high-profile case?
Well, yeah, and that's the problem. Everybody knows it's a retrial. You know, typically the second jury doesn't know about the first jury, or at least the lawyers try to hide the fact that there was a non-verdict in a first trial. But here everybody knows the evidence, and everyone has their own feelings about Bill Cosby and whether he did it or not, or whether it's even fair to prosecute this case after the district attorney said that he wouldn't use his deposition against him in a criminal case.
The books, by the way, tell me if I screw up any of these. In Contempt.
Bestseller.
Number one bestseller.
Number one bestseller.
The Trials of Nikki Hill.
Number one.
L.A. Justice.
I'm the one.
The Last Defense and Lawless, everybody. And get them on Amazon and click through our link and do all that good stuff.
Thank you, Adam. I need the money.
Have you done an audiobook?
You know, okay. I did an audiobook for In Contempt, and if you, you know.
Well, I think Dawson ought to pick one of those up. He did very well for me.
Yeah, on Mistrial. So, April 6th, Capitol Theater, Madison, Wisconsin. That's coming up, doing a stand-up show. And then Ladin Theater, Portland, first ever stand-up specials. We're filming them, putting them on TV. We'll do that June 9th. Go to amkroll.com for anything you need. Also, for Chris Darden, you can check out his law firm. Should we send people to Darden Associates Incorporated or tell people to check you out on Twitter at cdarden?
Yeah, you know, they check me out on Facebook, Chris Darden, Twitter, check Darden Chris, Law Group,
Check Chris and I out in the criminal courts building, appearing before ex-female DAs and trying to explain everything that
all
we just
Mark.
Said.
Yeah. And try to stop him.
Your restaurants, your resorts, Mark.
I've got San Clemente. I've got Casa Tropicana. I've got opening next month the Capri. We've got Prova Pizza in both Grand Central Station and Times Square. And 10E Mediterranean Tapas downtown in the Fine Arts Building.
So, until next time. Adam Carolla for Christopher Darden.
Yo.
And Mark Garriga saying mahala.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.